Hi, I'm Brenda, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you, Randy, for asking me to share tonight, and welcome to the newcomers, and my message is for you. Saying that I'm an alcoholic and my name is Brenda, that is such a good feeling today, because I've said it countless times in this program, but at the meetings that I've been at, but the best time that I said it was when I hit my bottom and I was actually able to say I am an alcoholic, and I surrendered at that point. But the beginnings, you know, starting back in my childhood, I really do believe that I was predestined for this disease. I was different than my family. I mean, my mom and dad, my brothers, they didn't. I was just different. I was very active as a child. I was into sports. They had us bowling, swimming. I won every presidential award. It was very important to me to succeed. But the behaviors that I showed, I mean, I would get on my bicycle and I'd ride forever, and it was my freedom with my bicycle, and I wanted better and bigger bikes. And my dad always taught me if you wanted something more, then you have to earn it, and so that's what I did. But then as I was in grade school, and I got on my bike and I would ride it to the store and I'd buy bubble gum. You know, I'd stock up on it, and I wanted the bubble gum, and I didn't want anybody else to have that bubble gum. So I'd hide it under the newspaper in my desk, and hoping the teacher didn't find out, but they always did. And I had to surrender that bubble gum. So I don't remember my brothers doing things like that. And then in second grade, I got my first kiss. I went after my first kiss. And he told the teacher, and I tell you, if I had known about alcohol, I probably would have drank that day. But then as I continued on into junior high school, you know, I wasn't raised by alcoholic parents. My parents weren't abusive. They were very loving. They took us to church every Sunday. I had a pastor that adored me. He didn't have any daughters, so he adopted me. I was his little Miss Muffet. So God always put people in my life that watched over me and protected me. And I had, the only thing was my grandmother. You know, she was less than nice to me, but, you know, as I've worked this program and done my steps, I have realized that, you know, she was exactly who she was supposed to be. She was doing the best that she could do. And my expectations were my expectations. And I've learned today that it's about me. It's not about how others treat me. And so when I was in junior high school, I remember being angry at my grandmother, and I was going to get even. And that was when I first picked up something. It was cigarettes. And I was in the garage with some kids in the neighborhood, and it was like, oh yeah, I'm going to get even with her. I'm going to hurt her. And you know, it was a rush to do that. And I felt like I had some power. And then my mom, she wanted me to model, and that was very important to her. It was not important to me. From 5 years old, I was going to charm school, and I didn't like it. But when she put me on the bus to go to Barbizon when I was in high school, every Saturday, that's when I was smoking again. It was just, okay, I'll show you. And in high school, my first drinking began. I worked at a little donut shop. I lied about my age. I was good at lying. And I went in, I lied about my age, and I told them that I was old enough to work there, and not thinking that they, of course, would call my parents to find out that I wasn't old enough. But my girlfriends would come in at closing time, and they'd bring out alcohol that their brothers had bought for us, and we'd fill up the buckets with alcohol, and we'd walk to the dances and mix it with all kinds of different soda, and we'd walk to the dances and we'd laugh. And Lori, my girlfriend, would always throw up. She was always in the bathroom, and her boyfriend would always ask me where she was, and that was the first sign of insanity to me. You know, it was the same thing every Friday night. But then, my first blackout, I was a blackout drinker pretty early on, because I was a sophomore in high school, and my mom and her best friend, who is still her best friend today, we went down to the University of Illinois and to look at colleges for Debbie and her friend. They set us loose. We ended up in a bar. They were making out with boys, and I was very uncomfortable. So it was the first time that I remember drinking, because to help me be more comfortable with my surroundings. And I drank, and I drank, and I drank, and there was no stopping me. It was on, and I just drank until I was sick. And then I was begging them not to tell our parents. Oh, yeah. And I threw up in her dad's brand-new Cadillac. And then I had to listen to my mom for 4 hours on the drive back to Rockford. And about how could I do this? And I just was quiet. You know, I never said what was happening. You know, I just said, okay. And then when we got into the kitchen, my dad was home, and she said, what are we going to do with her? And I said, and he's like, well, it looks like she's done a pretty good job. And I went to bed for about 3 days, but it didn't stop me. I just carried on, and I had countless times that I did that. But then when I moved to Arizona, and I met the person I married, and I have two daughters with, and then we are now divorced, but we partied pretty heavily, but then I ended up pregnant with my daughter, Sierra, and I was able to control my drinking at that point. And I pretty much stopped drinking after Sierra was born. I mean, we would go out and I would drink, but it was a controlled drink. I always had to control my drinking. I did not know that normal people don't have to control their drinking. I thought everybody had to do that. I would be like, okay, I got to stop at a certain point, but I never knew when to stop. And so then I met a girlfriend, and she liked to party, and I was right with her, and that was when Sierra was about two. So I'd go in and out. I was periodic, and then sometimes it was just on, and then sometimes it wasn't. There was points where I was suicidal. I didn't want to live anymore. But then Dan and I divorced, and I started working really hard. I was a stay-at-home mom, so I had to find a career. All I knew was really waitressing, so then I got into insurance, and, you know, that was one big party. I made lots of money, and I had lots of partying, and that's what we did. We had it at work. We had it in our office, and I was in heaven. And when I found out that there was something that bad that happened to my daughters, and I did part of the things right because I believe of the way that I was raised. I knew right from wrong, but what happened was I didn't take care of me. I took care of my daughters, but I didn't take care of me. I just, it was really on partying then. I started doing drugs, which I was always afraid of drugs, and which is amazing to me because I was afraid of the hallucinogenic drugs because I didn't want to not be in control. But yet I could go into all these blackouts. Now that's insanity, and then come back for more. And, you know, all my friends that were drinking were like, Brenda, you need to slow down. And I would look at them and think, well, why? Why? You know, and what I realized is after that happened with my daughters, you know, it's not the reason I'm alcoholic. It just gave me reasons to. I mean, there was other choices that I had to do. And I had people that told me, you know, you don't blame yourself. Don't do this. But it didn't matter. It was just, it was on. And so then I moved to California, and I kept going back and forth. I did the geographic probably three times, and I every time I would come out here, I'd fall flat down on my face. It was just drink, drink, drink. I deserve this. I've worked hard. I raised my daughters. It was just drink, and then I'd end back up in Arizona with a drive of shame. And I just couldn't figure out why I was behaving the way that I was behaving. And I was got so scared. I remember standing outside on the patio just going praying, you know, God, please help me. I'm a nice person when I'm not drinking. You know, you thought you'd catch a clue there. I'm a nice person when I'm not drinking. But then I turned into this horrible person, and I absolutely thought that I was being drugged at the end because how could I have act this way? And then I got scared. I thought, boy, I wonder what I did in that blackout. You know, maybe I could have run somebody over. I never knew. I could have woke up in jail. But by God's grace, I'm standing here with all the crazy things that I've done. The fact that I'm still here and I'm sharing with you, it just shows me. And that's what showed me that there is a power greater than me, that God does love me. Because when I was growing up, I figured he loved everybody else, but I just was not good enough. And I was just too bad. But when I hit my bottom and God answered those prayers, because I don't want to quit drinking, as you all well know. I just wanted just to not act that way anymore. I didn't think the two met, you know, worked together. And so when I finally hit my bottom, I had moved up to Alpine. I was moving up to Alpine, and I was controlling my drinking. What happened is the third time that I got out here, I started going to church. And, you know, I've been raised going to church, but this time it was different. This time I got it. I was understanding what the pastor was saying to me. And and God was speaking to me. And then I was controlling my drinking, and I wasn't drinking as much. I'd have a couple glasses of wine, or I'd have a couple drinks, but I wasn't getting outrageously drunk and going into blackouts. And then I wanted to be baptized. And after I got baptized in January, I got baptized in November of 05, and January 4th of 06 is when I hit my bottom. And I spent 5 days in a blackout, started with the move, started with drinking that morning, and ended up in a hotel room. And I had a bottle of Captain Morgan, and I finished that bottle. And then the next thing that I know is that God was in that room, and I never felt so much love as I did that day. And I was able to actually, I think I did steps 1, 2, and 3 right there. And I reached out to someone who was not, it was just somebody that didn't have any real meaning in my life. But it started the ball rolling. They called my church 12-step me. They asked me if I was alcoholic, and I said yes. And it was just such a weight off of me. It was just such a beautiful thing to know that I don't have that there what was wrong with me. And then they told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I didn't know what that meant. But I was like, okay, I'm on. Let's go. And I couldn't wait to get to my first meeting. I went to my first meeting, and I just was so happy to be there. And I actually felt like I was at home. And I listened, and I heard a lady share about being an episodic alcoholic. And, you know, with my pride and not wanting to be an alcoholic, I grabbed onto that. I know today I am a true, full-fledged alcoholic. I can't drink ever, no matter what. And I know where that drink leads, and I've known that from the beginning. I could take a drink and look at it and follow it all the way through to where I'm going to end up. And as I said earlier, only by the grace of God did I not have to go that far. And today, you know, my parents, you know, throughout all my drinking, they always loved me. They never stopped loving me. They were always proud of me. I have two beautiful daughters, a beautiful grandson. You know, those are the blessings. I have a wonderful man in my life and an awesome sponsor, and I have so many awesome friends. And I'm just very, very, I am a grateful alcoholic. Thank you. Is it 10 minutes yet?